We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results just aren't what you'd hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So what do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable, dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential today at webflow.com. Hi there. My name is Jenny Rooney, Chief Experience Officer and host of Adweek's newest podcast, Marketing Vanguard. We're so excited to bring you the next evolution of CMO Moves by bringing you insightful content from our marketing community. Together, we'll dive into discussions with CMOs and other C-suite executives who are tasked daily with making decisions that in incremental or monumental ways move the needle for their brands, their companies, and the customers they serve. In each episode, we'll focus on one key idea or decision, why they made it, what it caused, whether it worked, the ripples it set forth, and how it has defined the person as a business leader. We also address missteps, poor choices, and gambles, as mistakes, of course, often yield the greatest knowledge. In addition, we'll ask each guest to share the names of people they rely on daily, as well as a recommendation for whom we should interview next. Hi, everyone. I'm Jenny Rooney. Welcome to the Marketing Vanguard podcast. Today, I'm joined by Farah Howard. She's the Chief Marketing Officer at GoDaddy. I'm so excited, Farah, for you to be here. Let's kick off the conversation. Farah, thank you so much for joining me. It's so good to see you again.
Good to see you too. Thank you for having me.
I wish we could be together, obviously, but this will have to do. Thanks for joining Marketing Vanguard. This is our new podcast from Adweek, and I'm thrilled to have you here because this is the podcast in which I'm talking to marketing leaders, CMOs, and in many cases, CEOs who came up through the CMO role who are making decisions that are changing the trajectory of their businesses, really. So it's just excited to have you here. You and I have known each other now for several years, and it's just been so great to see your personal career trajectory and sort of what you've been doing. And what I think is really interesting about you is the places you've been before GoDaddy. Obviously, now you're CMO of GoDaddy, but introduce yourself by saying, you know, all the places you've been thus far, because I just think you've had such an incredible background of B2B and B2C posts. And so talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. This is, you know, a great opportunity for me to get a chance to connect with you. And I was saying earlier to a friend of mine, you know, with someone that I know in person, right, Jenny?
Yeah.
The fact that we've actually spent time outside of Zoom together feels like an anomaly in this world.
I know. Too rare, unfortunately, now. But
I know.
We're lucky.
And we're in person. But in terms of the brands that I've had an opportunity to be a part of, I'll take you all the way back. Post-grad school, I had an opportunity to start my marketing career at Gatorade. As a lifelong athlete and soccer player, it was a dream job and a great opportunity for me to really get to understand the foundations of marketing. I moved from there to Dell. I spent over 11 years at Dell. I'm actually in Austin now, so both Dell and Austin had a big impact on me. Moved from there to Vans and had an opportunity to help them celebrate their 50th anniversary as a brand, which was fascinating. Headed from there to Amazon Fashion. And now last but not least, I've been at GoDaddy for 4 years.
Oh my gosh. So you've broken the tenure mold, I guess, so to speak. CMOs are usually only supposed to stay at companies now, I guess you're sort of like at that threshold. 2 to 4 years seems to be the norm, depending on what year Spencer Stewart is doing a study or somebody else is assessing that. So how do you what do you attribute your longevity at GoDaddy? And talk a little bit about your remit there.
Yeah, there are a handful of things that I believe has enabled me to stay in this role for 4 years. One, GoDaddy has changed a great deal since I walked in the door, driven by what our customers need, right? When I joined GoDaddy, we were selling domains and websites and hosting and productivity, like the basic toolkit of digital tools that entrepreneurs need to be successful in the world. And then a pandemic happened. And what entrepreneurs needed was dramatically different. They needed commerce capabilities, payment payment capabilities. They needed to do everything that they had prior done in person online. And GoDaddy evolved with that. At the same time, we had leadership changes at GoDaddy, which changed the culture in different and positive ways. And so I honestly feel like over the past 4 years, I've had an opportunity to work at a handful of different versions of GoDaddy. And so as a marketer, I think most of us get energy from change and innovation. Right? That's what our job is. You know, our job is about going to market in creative, unique, breakthrough ways so that customers can hear you and that you can hear them. And so my remit has changed over the 4 years that I've been here. And so has my scope. And so that's kept it really interesting. It's certainly kept all of us at GoDaddy on our toes because our customers' needs have changed dramatically. You also asked what my remit is. It's broad, and some of it's probably expected. With being a CMO, I'm accountable for how we go to market, specific to media, creative. We have an in-house creative team. But my team is also accountable for some of the things you might expect, product marketing, PR, but last but not least, also GoDaddy.com and all of our customer marketing. So my team is also responsible for running the full tech stack for all of our MarTech tools and GoDaddy.com. And so that's been a great learning opportunity for me as a leader to get closer to engineering and experimental frameworks on how you optimize your own site, which is fascinating because my job is to actually help entrepreneurs build their sites. I'm doing that every 5 minutes in my day job.
I love that. You got an MBA from Michigan. What was your undergraduate study? I'm just curious.
Yeah, undergraduate study was science. So I thought I was going to be a doctor. You know, I love sports, like I said earlier, and my goal was to be an orthopedic surgeon. I probably knew I was going to need one in the future, which I did. And I ended up working in a doctor's office in the summer between my sophomore and junior year. And I was fascinated with the customer's problems, but I wasn't as fascinated with the work because medicine is, by definition, a bit more rote, right? You have to be really, really good at one thing or a handful of things, but your days are pretty structured. And I like unstructured, I like new problems. So I quickly pivoted and ended up graduating with a science education degree, really setting me up more to work in health and wellness. So my first job out of school, I actually worked at a medical software company. And then I realized there was this thing called marketing, which candidly, I didn't even know when I was in undergrad. So went back to Michigan to really get the foundations that I needed from a business standpoint and a marketing standpoint. Because all of undergrad had been all the ologies, from psychology to sociology to, you know, chemistry and biology.
Oh, that's so funny. I know. I always tell people, like, the only other, so I was an English major and creative writing major undergrad. Botany was the only other area of study that I loved so passionately. And I always thought, well, if I wasn't going to do this, I would have been a botanist. But that obviously never happened. So, but I did work at my first job was at a magazine covering the long-term healthcare industry. So believe it or not, we actually both started out in the healthcare realm to an extent in our respective careers. It's interesting because GoDaddy, you know, when I think about GoDaddy and when a lot of people do, and frankly, I think it goes back to, it predates you. I mean, GoDaddy was like the pinnacle of over-the-top advertising in the Super Bowl, for example, right? I mean, that's where it just was like in your face, splash, like get attention advertising. Talk a little bit about that history and sort of that, you know, where you've moved from that, but also what do you bring forward from that?
Right. Well, what I'll say is, and this all was prior to my tenure at GoDaddy, but when I walked in, I was the benefactor of a brand with incredible brand awareness.
Sure.
Aided and unaided awareness in the US was off the charts. People knew the GoDaddy name. Now, many people didn't know what it meant, who we were, or what we could do for them. And that's really been the journey that we've been on. It's been taking the fact that we have this brand vessel that's well-known but misunderstood. Either people don't know who we are, or they don't connect with who we are. And we've been on a journey, first and foremost, to help entrepreneurs understand that we were actually a brand for them. And we looked at metrics over time. You know, speaking brand language here, like, is GoDaddy a brand for people like me? What we really wanted to do was drive up relevance. And one of the things that I was the most proud of in my first 2 years at GoDaddy was we became a brand that was equally for women as much as it was for men. And you could imagine some of our prior advertising that wasn't the case. Yeah. So we really told stories that were, you know, broad and about the customer. We did that by putting the customer in the center of our stories. So our advertising was very much about the entrepreneur and what their needs were by telling true stories of customers. Very cool fact, when we advertise with our customers, literally in our ads, unsurprisingly, their business grew too, like by exponential, exponential growth. So when we advertise the furloughed Cheesecake Sisters, we're still doing this today, and they're a East Coast company. When we're on air, their business goes through the roof. And our relevance increases, and correspondingly, our awareness increases. What we've been doing now for the past 2 years, because our business model has changed, is making sure that customers know not just who we are, but what we do. Right? First, we wanted to make sure we were highly relatable. We could fill our brand awareness with positive sentiment. And then what we needed to do was make certain that customers also knew what GoDaddy does and did. And that's a journey that we're still on as we move into commerce and payments. Many customers still don't know the amount of jobs that we can do for them at GoDaddy. And that's what our next several years ahead are going to be focused on.
So we're going to circle back to that in a minute, but I'd love to have you answer this question. You know, we're living at a time when so much of who we are is supposedly reflected in our social profiles, right? So tell me something about you. Tell the listeners something about you that nobody would know by looking at your LinkedIn profile.
I am obsessed with cooking. I'm obsessed with food. Love it.
Like, love it.
One of my big hobbies, fortunately useful in my family, is, you know, at the end of a really long day, regardless, pretty much every day, regardless of what time it is, I'm cooking something. In fact, it was a little bit of a joke with my friends and family that if you wanted to eat dinner at the Howard's house, you had to come over at 10:30 p.m. because my work day was stressful. I've got three young kids, but I was always cooking something. It was just probably going to be your second dinner.
Is that like an outlet for creativity for you?
It is. It is. And it's really useful. And I'm not the world's most patient person, so I love and appreciate art. I'm not a fantastic artist myself. I'm from a family of artists. And I know that the artistic process takes a lot of time.
Yeah. And energy.
It does. It does. And cooking takes a lot of energy, but a little bit less time. Some dishes are more time consuming than others. But you would not know that if you looked at my LinkedIn or you looked at my social handles, because I really post very little on social. I feel like I'm a voyeur, right? I'm out there looking at how my brand is showing up, the brand I'm affiliated with for work. And I post very little about my life out there.
Interesting. If you hadn't been the CMO of GoDaddy, what would you have been right now if your life had taken a different path?
I would be a psychologist or an organizational behavior specialist, which the latter sounds very technical. But one of the things that really motivates me is understanding the intrinsic drive of individuals and then how they work when they're together. I had no idea that that passion actually would be so useful in marketing. And that's a lot of what we do is understanding the individual needs of many and then figuring out common insights. But at the end of the day, I'm really, really intrigued with how people tick. Mm-hmm. When I tell my family that that would be my alternate career, they're like, do you really think you could sit in one spot all day long and just listen? I'm like, well, maybe not, but I do get a huge amount of energy and insight from listening and understanding people.
Yeah, no, I believe that. It's interesting because I'm obsessed with the collaboration that's required in this industry. And nothing happens in the marketing industry to success without collaboration and connection of component parts. And I do a lot of work with business schools, and I feel like there's so much that could happen at the curriculum level where we should bring in more sociology, more psychology, more sort of, you know, organizational analysis into the marketing education curricula. So I get obsessed with that because it's about understanding human beings at the end of the day.
It is. And when I look back on my career, like I said, I started with a focus in science. And I ended up taking a lot of psychology and sociology classes at the end of my 4 years of undergrad because they were personally motivating to me. I had no idea how applicable they were going to be in my daily life. And they are. They are. They matter. And it is the reason that I believe one succeeds in business is their ability to actually understand, empathize, and work with others.
Yeah, 100%. One of the questions I want to ask you, you know, I've talked to CMOs who are like, I'm sick and tired of hearing about all the rosy stuff, all the things that work, all the successes, only because we all know that marketing is transforming so dramatically in real time that there are going to be missteps. There's going to be stumbles. They're going to be like flat out mistakes. So tell me about a time you either, I'll let you pick. Tell me about a time you either chose not to do something and actually that had a great payoff, or tell me about a time when you flat out made a mistake, maybe even failed at something, but the learning that came from that was massive and you were able to take that forward into your next move.
It's a great question. And one that I have a lot of different answers on, but let me give you a distinct one. Because I work in a company right now that is very experimentation focused, which truly encourages fallibility, right? Experimentation by design, you know, has a low probability of success because you're trying a lot of different things. With that as a backdrop. Oh, go ahead.
And let me add real quick, because I feel like pre-pandemic, going back, I don't know, 5-10 years, fail fast. We always talked about the concept of fail fast, but it sounds like what I'm hearing from you around your environment is fail a lot, right? Or give yourself.
Fail a lot. Fail systematically, right? Like fail and be like, well, that didn't work. All right, I better try this path. And it's, you know, micro tuning that helps get to a point of success. It is fail fast, but it's fail fast, fail often. And when I joined GoDaddy, I'll tell you about a failure that I had that ended up resulting in, you know, a positive on the other side, but walked in with accountability for GoDaddy.com, but only a subset of it. And, you know, if anyone listening to us today is a marketer, they could probably empathize and sympathize with that scenario. Like you own a portion of the store. And that's tricky.
And yet you're responsible for the entire operation.
And the revenue that comes in.
And the revenue that comes in, yes.
And the portion of the store that my team was accountable for was pretty antiquated from a visual identity standpoint. There was tremendous opportunity from literally, you know, the usage of font, spacing, to just the, at a macro level, the way the site looked, right? Because the front door of your website is your brand, and every experience you have with that website going forward is your brand experience. Mm-hmm. And so we knew we needed to do a major overhaul, and we did exactly that. We overhauled the visual identity of the site, but we did not do it systematically. And so what we did is and I bet many marketers that are listening to this have had similar experiences in their past. We were able to positively move many metrics, but also negatively moved other metrics, and we couldn't point to exactly what drove that change. And so even though we moved the visual identity of the brand forward so that things were more consistent, which was one of our goals, we ended up impacting the business results in the short term in ways that we couldn't immediately understand how to reconcile. So what ended up happening on the other side of that fail was we had to start doing micro tuning and understanding, all right, we changed X. Do we revert back, or do we figure out X plus, you know, one is the right formula? And so we ended up moving into a year of, you know, significant additional testing to optimize what we learned. And now on the other side of that experience, you know, we are doing more and more site experimentation that is much more systematic. I would say culturally and across GoDaddy, that was a big learning for many of us involved in that work.
Yeah.
Successful in the sense that we achieved a portion of our objectives, but we weren't able to directly correlate what drove positive change and what drove negative change. Mm-hmm. So the perception was we were not as successful as we could have been. And I would agree. And we've since reconciled it by being, like I said, much more thoughtful in our experimentation approach, changing a variable at a time quickly, so that we, you know, when we get a win, we can get more of it. When we don't get a win, we're like, all right, well, we got to go back and figure out how to make this thing work.
Oh, that's so cool. You'll never go back. So you'll never go back to the old way now that you've gone through that experience.
Correct.
Which is fantastic. Farah, tell me about, because we learn as much from our mistakes and our failures as we do our successes. Tell me about a time when you flat out failed. And what did you learn from that? And what have you taken forward with you into, you know, how you lead?
I'll give you an example that occurred in the past 4 years when I was at GoDaddy. And candidly, I should have known better as a marketer who worked on brands with deep heritage. GoDaddy's very well known for domains, right? If you want to get a domain, GoDaddy is consistently top of mind. We haven't been top of mind on websites. A lot of competitors in the space, and we have a fantastic product that we brought to market my first year here. And my team and I invested a huge amount of time focused on how we could bring that to market and gave it prime billing on the front of our website, prime billing in all of our advertising, to the point of dwarfing the presence and voice of our core business domains. We hit our goals on websites. We actually did fantastic specific to awareness, free trial sign up, all the KPIs specific to, you know, customer engagement that we hoped, but we did so at the expense of our core business. And you know, we quickly had to pivot, figure out ways to ensure that the, you know, that the domain visual identity and visual treatment on GoDaddy.com and the domain messaging and our advertising came back into the narrative. It fits seamlessly, right? You pick your domain and then you pick your website. They go together in most customers' mind, but we over-indexed on what we weren't known for. And then we had to, you know, really unwind a lot of the work that we had done to ensure that we weren't hurting our core business. And like I said, as a marketer who had an opportunity to work on brands like Vans that have like a very, very deep core and an audience that is deeply invested in that core, It was a fail for me as a marketer. My assertion was we needed to go big to get that message out, but we did so at the expense of what we're most known for. And the lesson for me as we unwound some of this work and figured out how those two items could coexist was they absolutely could. And we should have done that work up front. So that it's a good learning for me and a good reminder going forward. But remember to honor your core as a marketer. Both your core product, your core audience, and figure out how to build upon it like concentric circles instead of not honoring where you came from. And that was a mistake that we made.
So interesting. All right, switching gears, just talking about you as a business leader. One of the things we like to talk about here at Marketing Vanguard is just, you know, obviously regarding and talking about the role of CMO, not just as brand leader, but as business leader within your organizations. And so I have a fun one for you, especially with a sports background. You'll appreciate this. I personally played soccer. I love soccer. I grew up playing soccer. And so my question to you is, using that as a framework or, you know, an imagined scenario, you're a player on a soccer team. Are you the striker who's at the front of the field, always there trying to score the goals? Are you at midfield trying to sort of hold the line and be the go-between between the, you know, protecting the defense and sort of feeding up to the striker? Or are you on the defensive line protecting your goal from the offense coming in?
I love this question because soccer was my sport. So I'll answer it factually, but then I'll also answer it with the context of, you know, how I think about leadership. I was a center midfielder. Sometimes I played left mid. And I loved being in the middle. I didn't score much. I was the person who was making the passes and the assists. And I loved that position because I could see what was happening behind me and learn from it. I could see what was happening ahead of me and help, you know, steer, right? I mean, a midfielder is playing a role in the pace of the game itself. Often, if they're good and they've got, they're not, you know, playing above their level. And so another thing that position affords me, and I'll directly translate this into how I lead, is you've got to have a huge amount of endurance if you're a center mid, if you're a midfielder, period. And,
totally.
And that's my core strength, is my endurance and my energy. You know, and it's usually standing behind the team, figuring out how to get them forward. I remember years ago doing Strength Finder, if anyone's read that book or taken those tests. And one of my core strengths is maximizer, which is really how you get the most out of teams. And so yeah, I didn't know that when I was, you know, 8 and started playing center midfield, but it turns out it's actually the right position for my life too. But it was a position I played on the pitch.
That's awesome. That's awesome. There's a lot of responsibility there. You're really like literally the connective tissue, you know, for the entire team. Again, carrying through that metaphor if you'd like, but you know, who are your best teammates? Who are your best collaborators? You know, who are the ones you need to work with within your organization to be successful?
Yeah. If I speak more theoretically, and then I'll tell you directly, like who are the folks that I work with? My best collaborators are people who push me. Right. Mm-hmm. People who are like, well, what if we did it this way? You know, a little bit of a, you know, provocateur, right? Thinking about things in different ways. Mm-hmm. And people who are willing to think aloud with me. I am an extroverted thinker. It's how, you know, it's how I literally how I brainstorm and how I hone in on better ideas with my teams. For me as a leader right now, the people that I spend a huge amount of time with, I spend a lot of time with our analytics team, mm-hmm. that we're making progress on marketing measurement so that we can help broadly across the company articulate the impact that marketing has on our customers and our business. Mm-hmm. I spend a huge amount of time right now with my HR business partner, who I think is fantastic, both thinking about organizational design and really how you maximize teams and get the most out of teams. Because like most software companies right now, we're approaching 2023, but trying to do more with less. And I don't mean that negative. I mean, you know, there's a lot of macroeconomic pressures that we're all experiencing right now as marketers. And how do we really get the most out of our teams and leverage them? So my HR business partner is a great partner for me as well. And then I'd say that, you know, if I were just to quantify it to the three people I work the most with, sometimes it's just predicated on the day. It's like, yeah. Are we diving deep into GoDaddy.com right now? Are we thinking about creative strategy? Are we focused on how we accelerate, you know, communicating with customers through channels that we own? So I think the relationship that I have with my direct reports is critically important, that they're broadly aware of the corporate strategy and the work that we're collectively doing, so that I can kind of toggle to each of them as dictated by, again, whatever's happening in the day or week.
Tell me what scares you as a business leader, again, in this vein of obviously carrying so much responsibility. And I think obviously the pressures that we're all dealing with right now from an economic standpoint are huge, especially for CMOs. What scares you and what do you do to overcome those fears?
What scares me is the broader understanding that the organization I'm accountable for has about what's happening in the world right now, right? When I step back and look at what's happening macroeconomically and what's happening for and to our customers, there's a lot of change that they're navigating and that we're collectively navigating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've worked through very challenging work environments from, you know, when I was at Dell, we privatized. I worked through recessions in the past, but I've got, you know, a very varied team, you know, in terms of tenure and experience, and just making sure that they have the context to be able to weather what's happening right now is what scares me is the wrong word, but it's what keeps me up at night. It's
okay, like, that's fair.
How do I make sure that my team has adequate context to move the business forward and to support our customers and not live in fear? Because I contest right now that there's a lot of fear happening in corporate America. You know, we're coming out of a pandemic. The, you know, economic environment around the world is quite uncertain. Things feel often more unstable than stable. And so how do I ready the ship, ready the ground under my team's feet by giving them enough context to move forward without overwhelming them? Not because this is scary and unsurmountable. We will all make progress, literally across all of our industries over the course of the next year. And so it's about making sure that teams have enough context to move forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I would argue that CMOs uniquely have the ability within their organizations to do that. You know what I mean? To sort of allay those fears, allay those concerns, look at the big picture, provide context, and sort of tell that narrative internally, you know what I mean? In a way that's accessible and something that empowers people to feel comfortable, even though things are so uncertain. So I don't want to undersell that. I think that's a really, really important role to play. We'll be back with more Marketing Vanguard right after this quick break.
One thing I hear from my listeners all the time is that marketing leaders are under more pressure than ever to deliver real business impact. You know, more conversions, lowering CAC, and bringing in more revenue. But that's impossible when you're stuck with tools that don't move as fast as you do. That's why companies like Dropbox, Ideo, and Orange Theory all trust Webflow to power their web experiences. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. Learn how teams like yours are using Webflow to achieve their most ambitious goals today at webflow.com.
All right, so Farah, I want to ask you a question. A lot of, again, CMOs I've spoken with, in the midst of everything, one of the things that they still hold dear is sources of inspiration. You know, and you talked earlier in our conversation about the creativity that you can exercise when you cook, you know, and sort of you have artwork from your kids on the back wall. I know our listeners can't see it, but, you know, it looks like you're a person who grew up with creativity, grew up with art. And yes, we all know that marketers need creative inspiration, even as we get more sort of diving deeper into performance marketing and metrics and measurement and, frankly, even machine created creativity. Inspiration still has to be, I think, one of those key things that powers CMOs. Where do you go for your sources of inspiration?
Yeah, there are a handful of places that I go. I mean, for me personally, where I go for inspiration to quiet my mind so that I can then think bigger is I'll go run. I strongly encourage my teams. I think often early in one's career, they're like, I can't step away from whatever I'm doing and take care of me. And I'm like, actually, you have to, because it will inspire you. It will open up your mind. It'll give you some breathing room so that you can think differently. So for me, if I'm blocked creatively, sports are a great way for me to slow my mind down, get my breathing in check, literally like an equalizer, and put me in a creative space. Yep. And then things that inspire me specifically from a creative standpoint. Number one, I know that this sounds trite as a marketer, but we have to do this. Go talk to your customers. And if you don't talk to your customers all the time, find a way to do so. Lucky for me, we support small businesses. All I have to do is walk down the street and strike up a conversation with a small business owner and ask them, like, you know, what are you doing digitally? How are you running your business? Where do you feel like you need help? And that then ends up inspiring me and helping me better understand what their problems are and how to tell stories that matter to them. Because at the end of the day, as marketers, we're storytellers. And so other ways that I get inspiration, you know, reading. I read a huge amount, both fiction, nonfiction, and business books, and figuring out how the words that people use can evoke emotion. So huge amount of inspiration from that. And then lastly, you know, just quieting down and listening, period. Like, practice the art of open-ended questions. Like, I'm so conscious of yes or no questions because that stifles creativity. It's like, hey folks, what do you think? Hey, how could this be better? And asking questions like that, I think, really inspires and encourages creativity so people can think broader.
Yep. So much debate continues, obviously, around the relevance of marketing, you know, the role of CMO. Now that we're on the other side of the pandemic, the world has shifted so dramatically. And I would argue, listen, Mark, we're always going to live in a state of constant change. So that isn't really any different than anything marketers have been through in the past. But given where we are right now, what needs to be the role of marketing from your vantage point in moving the needle, in driving business growth? And how are you making that your central focal point?
Marketers' jobs are to understand customers and serve them. Sounds super basic. It's really hard to do, right? Because people are individuals and have unique needs. And so, you know, intimated in your question is like, is marketing going away? It's not. Because at the end of the day, what we're doing is listening to customers when we're really good at our job and putting products, services and opportunities and stories in front of them that resonate with them, right? So that our products are differentiated because they're actually doing something differentiated and special for that end user, right? For the customer. Yeah. And so, I mean, that can end up being packaged in so many different ways, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why the definition of marketing is so broad. When I was at Amazon, we used to talk about the continuum of math to magic, right? And so you'll find marketers who are highly analytical, looking at historical data that's available to them to guide their future decisions. And then there are marketers that are, you know, really like get that lightning bolt of creativity and, you know, are robust storytellers. Those two things are coming together more and more as we can measure more of what we do. But at the end of the day, the fundamentals of marketing remain the same. It's about connecting to your customer with a meaningful product, making sure you're positioning it to them in a way that actually matters and makes sense, and that you're delivering on that promise.
Yeah. The name of this podcast is Marketing Vanguard, and the actual literal definition of vanguard is a group of people leading the way in new developments or ideas. What's an example of a development or an idea that you personally have had that has led the way for your company or for the industry at large and your fellow community of CMOs?
I want to focus on creativity and in-house and what it means to have creative talent within your organization.
Love that.
And I'll start by saying that that might sound really basic, right? Folks are like, of course you've got to have creative talent in-house. But if I reflect back on my over 20-year experience in working in marketing, I'm showing my age here, that wasn't always the case. And so a pivotal moment in my career that ended up becoming, you know, really part of the vanguard of who I am and how I work is I had the opportunity to establish an in-house agency when I was at Dell, when almost all the work was done by over 800 agencies around the world back in the, you know.
Wow.
Around 2010 when that transition happened, so 13 years ago. And actually, if I reflect back, I think the initiation of that work started even earlier. It did. And at that point in time, there wasn't a lot of in-house agency work. We were desperately trying to recruit talent. We were recruiting all of it from agencies. We had to, you know, sell hard to convince an agency talent to come work on one business's problem. And we were successful in doing so. And what we found was the talent that we built, they shipped work faster. They were closer to the business problems they were trying to solve. And the team that I helped establish at Dell years and years ago is still in place today. And wow. Ever since that point in time, every company that I've worked at, if they didn't have an in-house agency, and by the way, they all had a semblance of one, a big focus of mine was establishing that in-house agency into a functional entity within marketing that really was the nucleus of creativity for the company and for our marketing engine. And so that's a, you know, it's a requirement for me as a marketer to have creative talent in my organization who's looking at problems differently and to have them deeply know the business. And like I said, if I reflect back, you know, 13, 15 years ago, we were the anomaly. There was one organization called In-House, N-H-O-W-S-E. And it was a tiny, tiny symposium that we went to once a year with a small number of marketers like us that were trying to, you know, establish internal creativity in their organization. And to be really clear, that doesn't mean you have to go at it alone. Right, like the best in-house agencies have external talent that they rely on so they can take their blinders off and see other business problems and then make sure that it's brand right and brought to market really fast.
Yeah, I love that because that's an example of a decision you made and the ripple effects are even continuing to this day, right? So it's extraordinary. So Farah, last quick question, in the spirit of paying it forward and, you know, continuing to sort of build our concentric circles of our community, of access and of spotlight on other people, my question to you is, who's next? Who would be the next industry leader you would recommend we interview for Marketing Vanguard?
I would recommend that you reach out to my talented friend, Craig Brommers. You might know him. He's
I love Craig.
At American Eagle. I actually texted him today. I was like, hey, I'm chatting with Jenny today. I think you should chat with her next. So he's ready, ready to go. And what he's been able to do with an amazing brand in a challenging time is super impressive. And his energy's off the charts. So he'll be awesome.
Awesome. We will reach out to him next and can't wait to catch up with him and have him on Marketing Vanguard. Farah, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. This has been an incredible conversation. Thanks for letting us in an inside look at what you're doing at GoDaddy and how you are leading your not just your brand, but your business at your company. So thank you so much and hope to see you again soon.
In person, I hope too.
Nice. Definitely.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.